views expressed on the Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, the Kevin Smith Show, Jerry Wills, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Jerry Wills, and I'm your host this week, the whole week long. We're going to have a pretty good time. I was just sitting here reading a book. Take a look at this. Close Encounters? No, it's Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. A very interesting book. It's by a friend of mine. His name is Robert Stanley. We're going to have him on tonight. I have some rather interesting people for us the rest of the week, provided everything goes as planned. And as you know, if you were watching the opening, nothing goes really as planned. So let's see here. I just need to do one thing as we're doing this. And of course, there's one thing missing in my program stream, and that is to record to disk. So, you know what, when you get everything set up and it's supposed to be perfect, it just doesn't work. So, what we're going to do, I'm just going to talk to you a little bit here while I'm working through this, and there we are. It should be fine now. Go back to this and turn this off. Okay, you know, one of the things that I've been watching in the news, and you probably have too, has to do with the reactors melting down over in Japan. If you're like me, you're wondering what the heck is going on in the world today. I've just a cold chill where this is concerned. You know, a lot of folks are very worried about it, and really, there's good reason to be. The radioactive particles coming out with the steam and the smoke from the reactors whose core has melted down, well, all of that garbage is going to blow towards the east. And right now, I was just reading something before we went on the air. Right now, the area around those reactors is considered a dead zone. It's worse than Chernobyl, actually. And I don't really understand why there isn't a lot of media coverage about this, why people aren't just freaked out beyond what they already are. It reminds me of something that I heard in a video you might want to take a look at. It's called Secrets of Alchemy by Jay Widener. And in this video, he talks about the North American hemisphere being the hemisphere of death. You might want to take a look at that. You know, some of the prophecies have said that the end of this age would be by fire. But they didn't say what kind of fire. Could it be a radioactive fire, perhaps? I know a lot of people are worried about a lot of things, and it doesn't do us any good to worry. I think more importantly, we just need to pay attention to the things that we have going on in our lives and go from there. And one of those things is to interview Robert Stanley. So we'll be back right after this break. I'm glad you're here. Talk to you back in a soon. How's that for crazy wording? See you in a minute. coming back. What crazy stuff. Yeah, we're back. You know, sometimes gremlins just get in the computer. You've seen it happen to Kevin, and now you've seen it happen to me. What crazy stuff. There's supposed to have been a break, and the computer just kind of went whacked out. I don't know. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking to Robert Stanley. He is the author of a couple of books, actually. One is Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, and the other is Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. I'll show you my bookmark when I'm reading this book, any of his books. I use this for my bookmark. And if you're only watching the radio, you don't know what's going on here. But as you can see, it helps to hold my place very well. And without any further ado, I want to bring Robert on. Normally I have a nice little bio, but that part of the computer died also. So I'll let Robert tell you about himself. And we'll go from there. Let's see if he's on the line. Robert, can you hear me?
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, man.
Clear.
All right, super. That's good. I was just telling the folks about you. I wasn't telling any tall tales. You are quite a guy. And these two books that you've written are really fantastic. The first was groundbreaking, and the second one, I don't know if you can see it or not, I'm only that far into it, so that's not as far as the finish, but my dandy little bookmark slides out periodically and I lose my place. Great, great piece of work, Robert.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Formerly a corporate journalist for Honda Research and Development in Torrance, California. Currently the editor of Unicus Magazine.com, and as you mentioned, I've authored two books about UFOs and extraterrestrials in Washington, D.C., and I'm currently a weekly correspondent for America's Morning News. That's a national radio news show, and I'm on every Friday, and they introduce me as the extraterrestrial correspondent.
Oh, wow.
I find quite unusual. I know it's supposed to be a joke, but I think I have broken new ground in the mainstream media discussing or interjecting ideas that weren't there before.
Well, and I've listened to a couple of those broadcasts. You've been kind enough to send them over to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really well done, very well presented.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Just the only reason I'm on that show is because of my first book, Close Encounters in Capitol Hill.
Uh-huh.
And the producer, he was doing a conservative talk radio show, and he started doing this weird segment on Fridays, and I thought, wow, that is really a unique idea. So I contacted him, and I said, let me send you my book. If you really want to talk about something weird, you're in Washington, D.C. already. Why don't you read this? And so he did, and we kept in touch, and eventually he got his more creative control, and he brought me on, and here we are discussing extraterrestrials in Washington, D.C. on national mainstream news.
How many listeners do they have, Robert?
What's that?
How many listeners do they have?
It's syndicated on over 100 radio stations across the United States. So I guess the listenership fluctuates like anything else, but it's pretty big. I mean, as far as anything I've done in radio, it's the real reason they keep me on is because I'm getting them ratings.
Yeah, well, of course, it's a hot topic.
Very much so. Even though a lot of people dismiss it, there's a lot more people who quietly are very interested in this topic and other things that are bizarre. If anybody that would like to hear my archives of it, just go to unicusmagazine.com. Click on the radio show link, and scroll down to America's Morning News. There's a banner there. You can click on it, and I've got about 20 different shows archived there.
All right. It's UNICUS. C as in Charlie. CUS. Unicus magazine.com.
Correct.
All right. Yeah, you'll check it out, folks. I think you'll enjoy it. I know I have. Every time Robert does one, he sends it to me. And Kathy and I, you know, turn up the speakers and sit back and listen to his program. And it's always good. It's not like a gee whiz thing. It's actually very interesting. And the way that the subject matter is handled on this national media network is just, you know, I respect them for that.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, you know, you were on, I don't know, it's probably been a year ago, I think, with your last book. How long has it been since your last book was published and you brought it out?
Yeah, the first one, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, came out in the fall of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And the investigation itself began for me in spring of 2005. So the book came out fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas this new book, the second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., is the result of 6 years of investigation and analysis.
Yeah, okay. And I know the details in that book.
Yeah, you're in the first book, Jerry.
Am I in the first book?
You have your own chapter, yeah.
I thought that was a secret.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. It's secret's out now. If you want to read some secret stuff about me, you can go get his first book and read it. What chapter is it?
It was a secret when we first published it, but over the years, when you've already come out of the closet, so I figured I would just carry the ball.
Yes, I came out of the closet, folks, and I did it in a big way. It was a worldwide broadcast.
That was something.
But the first person, and I've known Robert a long time. We met, gosh, where was it, Robert? It was in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And
NBC Studios.
NBC Studios, that's right.
And we met you on the other side.
Yes. And we've been friends ever since.
This is true.
It's been quite a number of years now.
That was 1995.
Wow.
95, something like that.
Yeah, I know it's been a while.
Yep.
So, anyway, I entrusted Robert with this information, as I do with, you know, and I don't have a lot of really close friends. I could name them off to you, the ones that are the most, you know, the closest friends I have. And I've shared some of the things of my past and of my experiences with them. And Robert was the first, actually.
Wow.
So that's how you rank, Robert.
Thank you. I'm honored.
So let's talk about this new book.
Yeah.
I don't have my cheat sheet here in front of me. Let me grab that real fast, because I have to pay attention to break times and so forth.
Sure.
Yeah, we have 10 minutes. Let's start talking about this. You know, like I said, I've read part of it, and it's just amazing. You know, the information you've compiled in here, I mean, this is a lot of work.
Yeah, thousands of hours went into that.
So what is the general overview of this book? If you were going to tell someone, this is what the book is about, what would you say?
Well, the title kind of spells it out, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. I guess you could say the subtitle would be the Hidden History of Washington, D.C., as it relates to extraterrestrials who are visiting there, or some of them are infiltrating, apparently, and influencing events in the U.S. government and the world at large.
Well, are these good guys or bad guys?
It's both, but generally speaking, the majority of them appear to be the bad guys.
Well, that isn't... That just isn't right.
No, but it's the way it is. And, you know, part of solving a problem is realizing that you have one.
Well, yeah, it's true. So, okay, we've got it divided into the guys in the white hats and the guys in the black hats.
Yes.
Now, the guys in the black hats are always the ones that everyone is most interested in knowing more about. the ones that are the good guys are like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
But the ones that aren't, what do you know? Is there anything that you can actually tell us about who these bad guys are, or would that be going out on a limb too much for you?
It's a little bit of a speculation, but based on the eyewitness accounts, and there's over 800 of them in this new book, there's some pretty nasty guys running the show there in D.C., or at least influencing events from behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And judging by their actions, I would say that they basically want to enslave everyone and control the entire planet, all the resources, etc. They may actually be able to time travel. And I don't mean just average Joe. I mean the upper elite of these extraterrestrials, I think, have the ability to time travel and are influencing things across the time spectrum in ways that we can only just imagine. So I don't know exactly what their agenda is because they're not talking, but I know if they wanted to just land and hold a press conference, they could have done that at any time.
Well, yeah, of course, and a lot of folks have said that.
Well, you know, this is the problem. A lot of people have said for years, if they just land on White House lawn, if they're real, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? Well, they landed on the Capitol building in 2002 in July, and they were photographed doing so on film.
All right. That's in your first book.
That's what led to, actually, I started with just an article that was published internationally in July of 2005. I published it on unicusmagazine.com, but it was also published in print on Nexus Magazine in about, I don't know how many countries he's in now. I think it's over a dozen. But immediately after that, I got visited by a black helicopter at my house.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that.
And that was no joke. I mean, I really, you know, I knew it was an important story, but I didn't really think I was going to rattle anybody's cage that hard.
So there was photographic evidence of a UFO landing on the White House. And folks, in case you haven't seen this, those pictures, are there in your book?
Originally, the first book I published, I used to give out a free CD included in the back of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But now anybody can go and see those pictures and more at unicusmagazine.com. Just click on either books or photographs, and it'll give you a link for that information.
Well, I've seen the photos,
mm-hmm.
and I was just astonished, really. When you first approached me about this, before you wrote the book,
yeah,
and I saw the pictures, I looked at the pictures, and I thought, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like anybody would. And given my background in history, you know, I of course, I'm not going to be the first one to jump on the bandwagon and say, woohoo, look at this, it's real. But I wanted to know more. And, man, did you ever provide more information in that first book. That's why I'm excited about the second one.
Yeah.
Now, there are the bad guys, mm-hmm. and they're in Washington, D.C., but they're also elsewhere, wouldn't you say?
Well, of course they are, but D.C. is a hub for people that are attracted to power, or the power to manipulate the affairs of man and,
right.
and the planet at large. So considering, you know, America used to be the preeminent superpower there for a while, and still is in some ways, we have a huge military. It would make sense that they were attracted to, or maybe even designed and set up, Washington, D.C. as a base of operations where they don't have to control everyone. They just need to control key people, key players on the chessboard, as it were. And the rest of us are pawns that will fall into line, more or less.
But don't you think that there must be, like, and I'm thinking linear. I'm thinking like
what?
A person who lives here on this planet.
Yep.
But don't you think there must be, like, you know, little soldiers out there that look like humans that are in the mayor's office or working on the police force or something like this?
You mean the good guys or the bad guys?
No, the bad guys.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do think that's part of it. But the problem is how do you identify them?
Well, that's exactly the thing that makes it impossible. And is there any way to identify these folks?
Only by their deeds. At this point, I would have to say that anybody who doesn't act with humanity's best interests, that they are suspect in my book at this point.
Well, we just watched Aaron Brockovich yesterday for the 25th time. I don't know. Kathy likes it.
Yeah.
And PG&E was putting chromium covalent 6. And they didn't tell anybody, and people are getting sick, and so on and so forth. If you probably watched the movie already.
Yeah, sure.
Would you say that they are in the same league as the bad guys? Or is this just people who are only interested in making a buck and doing whatever they need to do in order to make it? These bad guys are acting differently than this. What would you say?
I would have to say that this is a penal colony that's owned as part of an empire or galactic empire for the bad guys, and they influence key people to do things that are part of the agenda, which is to keep us all very ill-informed, ignorant, and spiritually dumbed down so that we can't be a threat to them and that we are very easily manipulated. So I hope that answers the question to some extent.
Sure, and I understand what you're saying, that this is a prison planet.
I know that's Alex Jones. that's his nomenclature. But I would have to say, it's not just a prison. This is an enterprise. It's part of an empire. We are subjects within an empire that is completely covert to us.
Right.
And the reason being is sort of like in the movie The Matrix, where Neo is confronting the architect, and he says, you know, there's been many different matrixes and many different anomalies. And he says, one time we even let everybody in on what was going on, and they just went apathetic. They refused to participate anymore. It was sort of a passive-aggressive thing. And I'm pretty sure that's what's going on here. They don't want us to know that we're just essentially puppets or pawns on a chessboard, because we would become, it's part of our human nature, we wouldn't be as productive or useful to them.
So, basically, if we didn't say prison planet, maybe we are a slave species. We're going to break, Robert.
All right.
When we come back, let's explore these ideas a little bit further. Folks, don't go away. We're just beginning to have fun. Well, at least I am. So I hope you are too. Robert and I will be back right after this short break. See you on the other side of this. And I hope that this thing works this time. Let's try it. All right, well, we're back, folks. Let's bring Robert on. There you go. Still with us, Robert?
I sure am, Jerry.
Most excellent. Are you watching the show on your computer at home?
No, I think that would be a little distracting. I tried that before.
And it's distracting running it, let me tell you.
I'll bet.
The Kevin prepared 6 commercial break spots for me.
Yeah.
Every one of them I tested before the show 3 times. Mm-hmm. And I just clicked on one, and it's nothing.
Whoa.
So, you know, the bad guys.
Yeah.
I doubt it. I'm running a Mac. They can't get into it.
They say there's new stuff out there, malicious malware or something that they designed specifically for Mac is coming out.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's special.
You didn't get that notice, huh?
I must have, you know, been in the bathroom when that was being passed around.
All right. Well, hopefully it won't hit you.
Well, hopefully not. So we were talking about the Earth being a prison planet.
Yeah.
Or, and I mentioned slave species. And really, you know, the information that I've received since being here is that this is more of a slave species.
Right.
And Prison Planet, that really kind of nails it as well.
True.
And really, I mean, how do you go beyond this? I don't want to get off on a tangent because I want to talk about your book more. But
no, it's a good one. That's a good thing because somebody asked me this yesterday. What is the end game for us? How do we resolve this?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I have an answer at this point other than the fact, like I said before, we need to address the fact that we have a problem, that we have been enslaved or are enslaved by this covert group or groups of entities. I don't know if they're from one place. I kind of think that there's a conglomerate. I mean, that's what an empire usually is.
Mm-hmm.
Various entities conspiring to control others that are weaker or ignorant or whatever you want to call it. But I do think we have the potential to overcome this once we start uniting with one another, and that's one of the reasons they constantly keep us divided against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be through war or various religious beliefs, finances, language. I do think that's an obstacle that we could overcome if we wanted to.
Well, I was talking with Linda Moulton Howell, I don't know, it's been over a year ago now, and she suggested that the world religions were responsible for keeping people separated, and that these had been put in place by the ETs in order to keep that kind of circumstance in play.
Yep.
That Muhammad was of one ilk and Christianity of another, and then you have, of course, Buddhism and things that are offshoots of Hinduism and such. But the overtones for it were basically to keep everything kind of in a constant state of aggravation.
I agree. And in fact, I was surprised. The conclusion of my book ended up being over almost 100 pages. Not what I intended it to be, but it was a shock to me to find out that the real history, aside from UFOs and
mm-hmm.
extraterrestrials, there's another side of Washington, D.C. I was not aware of, and that is the role that the Catholic Church, the Vatican, specifically the Jesuits, the role that they played in the founding of not only the nation, but specifically Washington, D.C., because they owned that entire original colony of Maryland. It was a grant to them by King Charles I, a place where they could practice the Mass, supposedly openly.
Right.
You know, and when Whitley Strieber put the word communion on the cover of his book, he wasn't kidding. I mean, I think he was raised a Catholic. And my understanding is that the communion is a way of communicating with beings that are truly extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And they sit in judgment, or, you know, they're higher than us. We're supposed to worship them. And I know this is probably going to offend a lot of people, but the Vatican is involved in a lot of covert activity.
No.
Through the various agencies that they've created over the years. And a lot of people would never do this, connect this publicly, but the Illuminati,
yeah,
the Jesuits,
yeah,
they're all in this together. The inner circle of the Masons,
mm-hmm.
and their counterpart, the antithesis of the Masons, is the Knights of Columbus, sworn enemies of the Masons. They all stem from the Vatican, the Knights of Malta, the Opus Dei. I mean, it's a global network. It's in a global intelligence network that has a grip on not only America from its very founding, but ultimately the world.
Wow. Well, I don't know what to say about that. That just...
Are you Jerry, you know what the Jesuit order is, right?
Well, you know, when we were investigating the tunnel system in Piura, we encountered all of this heavy, heavy history about how the Jesuits had taken all this gold and put it into tunnels, and when they were literally kicked out of Peru by the Catholics because they were so cruel.
Oh yeah.
So as a result, you know, we know a little bit about the Jesuits, but I mean, you're looking back at Jesuits in the 1600s, somewhere in there, and comparing it to today, do you believe that things have not changed that much in all those hundreds of years? Perhaps their methods have just been modified, but their intentions are still the same.
And they went, because they were kicked out of so many countries, they went covert.
I see.
You see, and they infiltrated, if not instigated, certain groups that we see arising on the around the world. Very powerful covert influences such as the Illuminati. They remind me of the Jedi Knights, except they're not the good guys. They're more like the Sith.
Yeah.
You know, and if you think about it, in Star Wars, who was the ultimate Sith Lord was a senator.
Yeah.
Gee, I can't think of any senators that might be rising to power that have covert influences.
Wait a moment. Is Wiener a senator?
Yeah, and let's see. There was a president. Oh, yeah, Obama was a senator prior to his meteoric rise to president of the world.
Well, that's a whole other subject, isn't it?
Well, I mean, look, one of his great advocates, Mr. President Obama, was or is Reverend the Muslim guy. I'm sorry, Farrakhan.
Farrakhan, yeah.
Yeah, he recently came out and said that President Obama was possessed by demon spirits.
Wow.
Mainly because of the way he was bombing Libya.
Have you read Tom Horn's book, Apollyon Rising?
I have.
And how do you feel this, you know, is there any connection with what you're saying and what
Absolutely.
You've read?
In fact, I quote Tom Horn in the conclusion of my book, along with many, many, many other sources, because it's one thing to suggest that demonic extraterrestrials are influencing the affairs in Washington, D.C., but it's another thing to give example after example after example of different people's viewpoint on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the conclusion is absolutely shocking, and I wrote it. It blew my mind as I was. I kept thinking, I'm almost done. Nope, it wasn't done till I got to some final analysis conclusion. It wasn't like it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and it certainly is something I'm very uncomfortable with because I don't like to be the messenger of this kind of bad news.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the patient needs to, being the body politic of the United States, needs to run a really high fever before it's going to recover from the parasites, exopolitical parasites that we have on our planet.
Robert, keep talking. I'm reading your book. Well, you said it was so good. It's last 100 pages, and I'm skipping ahead. I'm going to miss
out
for it.
I encourage people to do that, because if you read the conclusion, you're going to want to go back and read the over 800 eyewitness accounts that have happened in the last 60 years. There is no way that any group of people, no matter where they're from, would go into a place where they're not welcome unless that many times over a period of years, unless they had an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is to go there covertly as they've done this many times, it shows, it gives you a pretty good idea of how intent they are on achieving a certain agenda. So, as I said in the conclusion, we don't, until we actually have that press conference where they start talking to us, we're never going to know for sure. And even then, I would be the first person to raise questions and want to validate what I'm being told by anybody, regardless of where they come from, especially if they're landing in D.C. But I really feel like they have a lot to hide, and that's why they're doing this covertly. Because if we were to begin to find out what their true agenda is, some people would either shut down completely or other people would band together and start to rebel against it. And we are resilient. Believe me, I think they know that. The bad guys know that. And again, that's not only why they keep us divided, but why they won't admit that they're here,
right,
let alone why they're here.
Well, let's investigate a little bit through inquiry.
Sure.
You said that Farrakhan was saying that the president was possessed by demons. And we take that as a classical reference, demons being disembodied evil spirits.
Yeah.
Well, also you take ghosts, and ghosts can just move through walls.
Right.
So if we take this apart a little bit, we're really talking about the same sort of thing that people experience when they are having abductions, wouldn't you say?
And yes, as a matter of fact, I submit that the most famous case in Washington, D.C., that we call The Exorcist, that movie was based on a real story, mm-hmm, of a 13-year-old boy in 1949. There was a 13-year-old boy who became, quote-unquote, possessed. And he was helped by the Catholic Church through multiple rites of exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is the other thing that brought me, this is how I really got involved in trying to understand better the Catholic Church's role in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to analyze all the data about the exorcist. Then I found that there was many other examples of people becoming possessed in Washington, D.C., or places like the Capitol being haunted, quote-unquote haunted. Okay, there is a demon cat that allegedly exists in the Capitol building.
A what?
Even by itself, it sounds crazy. But when you combine it with all the other information that I provided there, it becomes extremely coherent, and you can see a different pattern emerge. When you place the alien template over it,
mm-hmm,
you start to understand that they're not just visiting once in a while. They're there all the time.
They live here.
We only see them. I'm sorry?
They live here.
They not only live here, they're based here covertly, but they probably have a base in D.C. But my point is that they can pop in and out of. They have infiltrated D.C. hundreds of times in the last 60 years, according to the research I've done.
All right.
And I mean, that goes right into the Capitol building and the White House and the Pentagon. Is there? Am I missing something?
Hmm.
That's pretty serious. That is. I mean, I know people listening to this for the first time are going, God, this guy's insane. I would urge you to suspend your disbelief and skepticism and read the information I've compiled and analyzed. Gives you a perfect timeline. I mean, I should say not perfect. A very well-organized timeline that I believe offers irrefutable proof that the aliens are not only here, but they are manipulating things in D.C. whenever they want to.
Well, we're
their agenda.
We're going into another break, Robert.
Okay.
Folks, don't go away. We won't be gone that long. Go fix yourself some popcorn. We'll be right back right after these messages. Let's see if this one works. No, it doesn't work. Oh, well. Well, we're back. Robert, you're still with us?
I sure am.
Excellent. All right. Well, I want to ask you some other questions. We've been talking about the bad guys. Whoops.
Right.
Bad guys all this time.
Right.
What about the good guys? Who are they, in your opinion, and what are they doing here?
Well, you really helped me with this. You were one of the first people that gave me some real insight as to what's going on between these good guys and bad guys. And I do quote you in the second book as well as Commander Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about what he had learned at NATO. you know, good guys are not just human. Some of them are reptilian and even other life forms that are shape-shifting, like octopus-looking entities. I sent you a picture of one of those that was taken last year. The good guys are here to help counterbalance the effects of the bad guys. They're limited as to how much they can do, because obviously they can't, you know, free will is still an issue.
Right.
Unlike the bad guys, the good guys do honor our free will. So, and they also don't want to trigger a massive active retribution by the bad guys on everybody, where they basically just trash the planet and everybody on it. If they get too upset, you know, it's like, wow, we're losing control. Okay, let's blow this thing up and move on.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to you and other people, that the good guys are here using telepathy and or just directly communicating. And I do have instances of this in the book mentioned. They supposedly, like, human Nordic-looking people coming from Venus. I don't know if that's really where they come from, but regardless, they've been trying to talk sense into our leaders, specifically Eisenhower, and I guess President Ford was approached, possibly Nixon. And they tried to, you know, offer them some help and some advice, but it wasn't really accepted very well, at least from my read on it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the bad guys seem to have a much greater influence over our leaders and the public in general. In fact, the media has done a very good job of making people believe that any alien is an invader and has an ulterior motive that ultimately harms humanity. You know, the other side of it, too, is that, you know, they've said that the society would collapse.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to have open contact, that people would freak out. Well, I don't believe that's the case anymore. Maybe there was a time when that was the case, and maybe that's why the good guys have been very careful about just openly showing up and disrupting society. But I think more than that, it would be typical human behavior is, even if the good guys showed up and said, hey, we're here to help, suddenly politicians would become irrelevant, bankers, priests,
doctors.
They would all take a lower position to these more advanced, highly technological, space travelers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a component. You know, I'm sure the good guys don't want to be worshipped or looked up to for all kinds of advice and help. So it's a very tricky balance here.
I think the politicians would probably be lining up in order to make nice with the good guys, so they would have, you know, friends on both sides of the fence.
Possibly. It depends how deeply controlled or influenced they are by the bad guys, because, you know, the other thing is, supposedly there's always the possibility that we could engage in warfare with any extraterrestrials that show up, that may be part of the scenario that's been kind of the ultimate ace up the sleeve of the bad guys.
Right.
You know, they could trigger some kind of knee-jerk reaction. Like, even if the good guys suddenly appeared, the bad guys would twist it around in such a way that, you know, they suddenly tell everybody, hey, these guys are here to eat us or invade, take over, and, you know, people would panic, and there would be carte blanche for the military to launch an all-out assault and take over, basically martial law over the entire planet.
Well, sure. And, you know, it's already on the books that it's against the law to have contact with an extraterrestrial.
Oh, NASA said that. I don't know how they would enforce it, but I do know that Customs was the first people to greet the space shuttle when it lands.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why either. It just seems really weird to me, because what are you going to bring back that you need to declare through customs?
Wow.
I don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. So, do you have any information in this book about the good guys?
Some. Yes, as I said, there's, you know, in 57, a Venusian, a human, wherever he's from.
Is that Val Thor?
Alexandria, and supposedly was taken to the Pentagon and stayed there for a few years and met with Pentagon leaders and other world leaders, and specifically Eisenhower, Nixon, and stuff. And he was trying to help, and it's interesting because he said there was others of his kind that were living here covertly trying to help us. You know who wrote about this was Dennis Hopper.
Really?
In what was that crazy motorcycle movie? I'm drawing a blank now. Easy Rider.
Yeah.
You remember that scene with Jack Nicholson where they're sitting around the fire, and Dennis Hopper looks up. Well, he wrote the script, by the way. He's sitting there and he looks up and he goes, "Hey, man, I just saw UFO," and Jack Nicholson launches into this diatribe about, you know, the Venusians are here living among us, and they can't tell us that they're really here because civilization would unravel. I mean, I've got it on my website under the radio show. If you go all the way to the bottom of the page there, I've got a copy of that little dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And it describes it pretty well. I think he was kind of ahead of his time. I know he was a fan of von Däniken and stuff, and Filikovsky, and it's just like people know. Some people know, but generally speaking, the truth just isn't going to come out in one lump sum. You know, it isn't. Everything's so compartmentalized and covert, well, and people have been so heavily conditioned.
It's like
to see things only one way. In other words, unless like somebody from the government gives them the official word, yeah, extraterrestrials are here, most people aren't going to believe it. That's how conditioned they are. That's how we are. Our society is always to look for an authority figure to tell us what to do, what to think, how to feel, etc.
Fascinating stuff.
You know, look, I thought if you got actual negatives, film of UFOs landing on the Capitol, I really thought people would start to pay attention, and it was just the opposite.
Sure.
It's been an absolute uphill struggle for me, a battle at times even, to get people to recognize that this, not only did the event happen, but the implications for such an event in the heart of P-56A prohibited airspace after 9/11, for anybody to fly in there, I mean, let alone a swarm of UFOs, come in there, hover, land on the Capitol building and the surrounding area for at least a half an hour, and nobody responds.
Well, we're going to break again, Robert. Radio affiliates need their time. Folks, don't go away. We'll be back with Robert Stanley right after these messages. See you on the other side of this. And we're coming back, folks. Thanks for waiting for us to get finished with the break. That was a fun break. If you're watching on the video, had a couple of pictures of Kevin on there. Let's take a look at this one again, shall we? Let's get Robert on the line. Robert, are you with us?
Sure am.
All right, we're just going to show a picture of Kevin. He's standing in front of a big cow head. Yeah, that's just like him, too. He's out having fun, and I'm sitting here under these bright lights. Well, let's take this a step further, shall we?
Sure.
I've all kinds of questions for you.
Okay.
And I'm sure if I do, that there are those out there listening who also have questions. And I understand Kevin has not had the lines open very much in the past because not many callers. So, folks, if you are going to be listening, I expect you to be calling. If you're not going to call, then you're really going to miss out, because Wednesday I've got a great surprise for you. But let's see if anybody wants to ring us up. I have to find the phone number here. Oh, it's somewhere. There we are. Lines are open, folks. 602-412-3196. That's in Arizona. And if you live anywhere else in the world, well, send me an email, I suppose. Let me get the email up and running. And you can send an email to expeditions@mac.com. Expeditions is spelled with an X. Expeditions. Expeditions@mac.com. And we have a caller. So are you ready, Robert?
Sure am.
All right. And we have a little bit of a noise in here, too. Let me just adjust this. See, this is all some of its new equipment. I have to adjust it. Hello, caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show with me, Jerry Wills. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex from Miami. How's the weather in Miami these days?
Hot and humid for the next few months, probably.
Yeah, we lived in Tampa. I know how that can be. All right, you had a question or a comment for Robert?
Yes. I was wondering how, Robert, how your information fits in with David Icke's research.
Good question.
Wow. Not in the same league as David Icke, but I guess, you know, everybody has touched on this same issue from their own perspective and their own experience. And I've tried to stick more with the facts as much as possible. And the second book is full, I mean, over 800 eyewitness accounts of events that have occurred since 1850 to the present in Washington, D.C. I've never seen David Icke do anything like that. In fact, I've never seen any other journalist do what I've done. Not that they couldn't, it's just that they just didn't do it for whatever reason. So I'm aware of Mr. Icke's work. But I think a lot of that stuff he throws out there, I'm not sure he has actual any evidence or supporting evidence for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting that you had some of the same conclusions when, like you said, you approached it from a different angle.
Yes.
I found that very interesting.
Well, I don't disagree with some of his conclusions. I'd like to see a little more supporting evidence. Because, I mean, the guy used to work for the BBC. Granted, it was as a sports journalist, but he must know the method of journalism, and that's you have to have... It's one thing to engage in punditry and offer opinions, but it's important when you're addressing the public to offer some factual evidence to back up what you're saying.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Okay,
so,
thanks.
I hope that answered your question. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'd like to mention that if people are interested in reading my book, seeing the pictures, or sending me emails, you'd have to go to unicusmagazine.com. Mm-hmm. That's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. You can also pick up my books, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, or Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. through Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
I checked yesterday. It's actually a lot of different places on the Internet now that I wasn't even aware of. All these different booksellers are carrying it on the Internet.
We have another caller. Let's find out who this is. Hello, caller. This is Jerry on the Kevin Smith Show. Your name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello, this is Tony from Denver.
John May lives.
Sorry, Jerry. I called Kevin's line instead of yours. I got too anxious.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know how anxiety can be. It can really mess you up. So, Tony.
Well, my question for you and Robert, especially you, Jerry, the two of you spent a lot of time talking about the bad guys.
Yeah.
And when you got around to the good guys, Robert, you referred to Jerry, and then you referred to telepathic communications.
Yes.
Does Jerry ever communicate to you telepathically?
Oh, boy.
Careful how you answer that one, Robert.
Potentially, yes. Look, I know, Tony, I know telepathy does exist because it's happened to me on more than one occasion. So whether it's a technology or it's just a technique that can be learned or taught, I know it's real. Some people are very good at it. The problem arises when you abuse it and you're basically putting thoughts in somebody else's head that they're not sure if it's theirs or not. They can't tell the difference.
Exactly.
Kind of like pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an invasion of a person's free will at that point. And it's very manipulative, and I think it's a violation of a higher law. But I'm not here to judge. I'm trying to point out the problem that we might be having. As I said, you look at the when you read in the conclusion, okay, and I give newspaper article accounts of what really happened in what later became the book and the movie The Exorcist, that boy was being manipulated like a puppet by some kind of entity, a very dark, demonic entity. But I say that that is an extraterrestrial. You know, maybe it's an ultra-dimensional. Either way, it's in Washington, D.C. And if it can do that to a boy, it can certainly do it to any man who's unaware. Now, obviously, our leaders don't go running around, you know, acting like they're completely possessed. But if you look into their eyes and judge by their behavior, they act like they're part of some kind of agenda. In fact, the technical term for this is called Beltway fever or Potomac fever. And most people who've been there for a long period of time start to exhibit very bizarre behavior. It's inhuman, in fact, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that boy in The Exorcist, that really intrigues me. I remember when you told us that last time you were on the show with Jerry. Far as Jerry, how else is Jerry involved as a good guy?
How is he what?
How is he involved as one of the good guys you referred to?
Okay, Jerry's been very helpful to a lot of people with his special gift of healing. It transcends what most of our medical professional people understand. And I've had a lot of conversations with Jerry, and I've also experienced it. My son has experienced his special ability, and I know it's real. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the main reasons that Jerry's here, is to help us, but also show by example that we all have this ability, and we should be using it to help one another. It's a God-given gift. It's being suppressed here.
Exactly how I feel, too.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, I actually did want to spend the second hour talking more about the good guys, and you know, prior to meeting Jerry, I have had close encounters with good beings of a higher dimension, but they only showed up in my life when I was having a crisis. I mean, either near death, I mean, because of illness, or I saw this one boy, he literally was possessed, and he thought he could fly, and he ran right into a very large sliding glass door that was not safety glass. He broke the entire door with his face.
Ouch.
Sliced his face right open. And I was working as a security guard at the time, and when I witnessed that, I reflexively jumped up, ran over, went into the house, called the paramedics, otherwise the boy would have bled to death. And I got such a bad feeling being there. And it took me quite a while before I realized that, you know, what was going on. There was a dark demonic entity that was literally feeding off the pain, the suffering, the fear, and the anxiety that had been created by that event. So it's kind of a long story. I'm going to write about it, but this happened many years ago, but it feels like it happened yesterday. I will never forget that event, because it was as dark as darkness could be, as far as I'm concerned, and it really touched me in a place that I had to get rid of that parasite. And that night, I went up to the mountains, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I meditated, and I ohmed, and I, whatever you want to call it, okay? At some point, I left my body and went into the light, and that's where I met a higher being, a glowing, radiant, loving being. And They're literally that close, but you know, because we're so locked up in our own little world here, unless we are thrust out of it, you know, sort of like in a vision quest, you know how they would starve themselves, and you, sometimes you take substances. You have to really work very hard to pierce the veil of illusion here on this world. But once you do that, there are other beings waiting on the other side to embrace you, who are radiant and loving and intelligent and compassionate, and I would say related to directly to us.
And this,
well, Robert, thanks for being on the show tonight. You're one of my favorite guests. I got one more question. It's kind of a personal question for me. The Nexus magazine that you're involved with.
Yeah.
Could you tell Jerry, maybe off air, anything you might know about Marcus Allen? And thanks for taking my call, Jerry.
Hey, Tony, are you there?
Yep.
Marcus Allen?
Yeah, Marcus Allen sends his regards to you.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Folks, lines are open once again. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 602-412-3196. Wow, we have another call.
Who is Marcus Allen? I'm drawing a blank.
He's the publisher of Nexus Magazine.
Okay, and I only know the editor, Duncan Rhodes.
Yeah, you know, the publisher is Marcus Allen.
Oh, I've never had the pleasure.
He's a nice fellow. I had a nice conversation with him this afternoon.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Hello, caller. This is Jerry on the Kevin Smith Show. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
It's François from Montreal.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm very fine.
You have
poor but happy.
I'm sorry. Say that again?
He said he's poor but happy.
Well, it sounds like a Sheryl Crow song to me.
You're rich in spirit.
I hope so.
I hope
you
so,
know,
too.
I'm calling about the bad guys, you know, like there's a lot of them in Montreal. And basically, I want to correct something, like in my own opinion, they don't have an empire.
Okay.
They're just, you know, like they're just like a bunch of school bullies, you know. They go from planet to planet and destroy it, and they told me it's only their fifth planet, you know, they're on, you know. And they, after that, they don't care if it takes like 50 million years to reach the next star. You know, they have no tech. They just, like, use black magic. They're a bunch of undead.
Well, they certainly act like it.
Just like, according to when, you know, I really talk to them, you know, like those possessed people.
Yeah.
And things, and that's about it, you know, like, but the party is over. You know, like, because the good guy, they hired, like, the real bad guy. You know, because the good guy, they're not violent.
Right.
The real bad guy, they work for the big boss, you know, like, call it God, whatever, and they kind of the immune system of the universe. And things gonna go like, you know, like, someone asked me, like, to spare this planet, like I can do something. And it's probably gonna happen, and I hope, like, it's not gonna be a lot of dead. You know, because they're just like their spirits. Maybe the combat's going to be in other dimension, whatever.
Mm. Right.
Wow, fascinating point of view.
That's about it. Jerry?
Yes?
If you're an extraterrestrial, you know, and you, on your planet, you have another body, do your species have a white iris?
No, I don't have another body. I keep that one here in the closet. It just, well, Kathy doesn't like it, so I keep it hidden away. It looks just like this one in case this one wears out.
Okay, because I'm on the TV channel, and now you're okay, but the beginning, you're blinking, you're probably tired, and you blink your eyes a lot. And when you close your eyes, I can see a white iris.
Well, then you're starting to see things that'll give you answers. Actually, what it is, right off to my left over here, The I have halogen lamps, and ooh, it's just bright, just bright. And if I wore my sunglasses, well, that might not look so good on the show. But you know what? I might do that tomorrow night.
Okay.
Thank
you. You're going to look like a man in black.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Folks, the lines are open again if you want to call in. 602-412-3196. Some pretty interesting comments, Robert.
Yeah, I'm glad people are calling in tonight, and I do have this observation to offer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that this isn't just a prison planet. I think of it sometimes as boot camp.
All right.
for souls, and we choose to come here and encounter these obstacles and overcome them, because I believe we will prevail.
Well,
in the long run, individually, collectively. Some of us are going to overcome the obstacle course and graduate to a higher level of being.
Yeah.
That may not be available everywhere. This is a unique situation here, a dichotomy between what we call good and evil, light and dark.
We have another caller. Hello, caller. This is Jerry Wills. You're on the Kevin Smith Show. Your name and where are you calling from, please?
Jerry, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Brent from Wyoming? Good to hear from you, Brent.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I got a cold.
Well,
sorry to hear.
I'll put on my mask and we'll be protected.
Yeah. Now, I missed part of the show, so I'm going to ask this, not knowing everything you said, but as I understand the situation, there are, shall we say, the dark hats who would like to enslave us and take over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, there is the Galactic Federation, the Transcenders, you name it. Jerry is an example of these people. They are there's one group that is going to intervene on our behalf to hopefully set us free from the Dark Hats.
Right.
What is your opinion of this happening?
Okay, and tell me your name again.
Brent.
Brent. Very good question. The caveat is this. My understanding is, unless we ask for the help from the good guys who we're related to directly, genetically, spiritually, they cannot legally intervene because it would be a violation of free will. Does that make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense. I've been asking for, I'm almost threatened a few times for not intervening on our behalf.
I understand, and you're not alone. A lot of people have asked me that. And I mean, really angry about it, too. And it's incumbent upon us to first have this dialogue so that enough of us can make the decision to ask for help from our neighbors, our relatives, and from the stars, who want to help us. And it's a very simple process. The way it was explained to me, that we simply need to vote on this. And I've been holding back until the time is right to do so. But that's really all it's going to take, Brent, is a vote, a global vote. Now we have the internet, radio, talk radio and stuff. We can do this. We can put it out there. But first you have to lay the groundwork, is to show people, look, we do have a problem. And there is a solution. There's a solution to every problem. But first we have to recognize the fact that we have this problem and that we do need to work on it together. When we work in concert, there's nothing that can stop us.
Well, I think maybe more than anything, it's getting to a point to where there is an agreement between everyone that would be a common agreement and not a basket full of similar suggestions.
Right. It's called an accord.
Oh, I was going to use that, but, yeah. Well, you used to work for Honda, so I didn't want to bring that up.
No, that word existed prior to Japanese taking a as a car.
It did?
It, although it is a vehicle, it's a political tool or a, an icon of sorts that shows that we're thinking and working together in concert towards a common future.
Exactly.
Can I make a suggestion on how you present the information?
Go ahead.
If you say extraterrestrials, some of us will get it, some of us won't.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who would balk at that.
Sure.
If you just point out what the problems are and say it exists on a spiritual level, that there are spiritual beings that are willing to help us.
Right.
That might be another approach.
Wow.
Well, you know, Brent, in the conclusion of my second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., I actually say that these, in the past, our ancestors had various names for these beings, whether it be called demon, angel, or what have you.
Oh, we've got a break.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Hold that thought, Robert. Brent, you want to hang on?
I'm going to hang on.
All right.
Hope you feel better.
Take care, buddy. Folks, we're going to break again. We'll be back, according to my sheet, in just a few minutes. See you then. All right, folks, we're back. I want to thank you for staying with us this evening. I'm Jerry Wills. I'm sitting in for Kevin Smith. And the phone lines are open. Our guest tonight is Robert Stanley, who has written a book, another one. It is just fantastic. I can't wait to just skip to the end. It's called Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. I like it so far. I've read about halfway through it. I'm amazed. And I have questions. Quite a few questions. You know, when you get into the mind of the person who wrote the book, you start getting a different feel for it, and that's why we have Robert here this evening. And Robert's here. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Jerry.
You know, I was wondering, is there anyone else reporting this information?
There's people talking about UFOs and extraterrestrials, but not in D.C. for some reason, and that was something that really shocked me. I thought once I broke the story, more people would get involved.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was the opposite. They ran for the hills, even people that are, you know, career UFO researchers.
It's like it's a no-touch zone. It's Washington. You might get yourself in hot water.
Apparently so.
Spooky business.
I don't know exactly what. I can't really speak for what goes on in other people's minds. All I know is I thought it was a legitimate story. In fact, I mean, I was sure of it. I didn't report it until I actually got the 35 millimeter negatives analyzed, and I'd done quite a bit of journalistic investigation of the photographer, and that was the initial story. But then what I found was, there was over 100 reports I found in the first few months of UFOs in D.C., and I thought, wow, how come I never heard about that?
Yeah.
So I kept digging, and then I found 200 reports, thought, my God, I got to publish this.
And that's your first book.
Yeah, and I cranked it out really fast, and there's 220 reports in there, and along with chapters of interviews with retired military, and one retired Los Angeles Times journalist who's had contact with ETs allegedly, and other things that are just, I thought, were fascinating. I put the UFO DC events into the context of the UFO experience globally. I mean, I really gave it a good solid context. However, the second book is a quantum leap forward.
Well, yeah, I can tell by reading it.
Well, I mean, it's six years of work, and I've got over 800 different reports, but they're also in a timeline. So you can actually see, when you read it, you can see a pattern emerging over a period of time where different people are reporting the same events, which lends credibility and validity not only to all the other things, but it gives you an idea of the level of activity that's been going on right there in the heart of our nation's capital.
Hmm.
And it is covert. I mean, whether it's good guys or bad guys, it's all covert, and that's, I think, why so many people have missed it, and also why so many people were skeptical when I first started reporting this. They're like, yeah, sure, right. I mean, we've never heard of anything about this before. You know, I think a lot of people thought I was just making this up.
Well, let me ask you a question. How's the U.S. government reacted to your investigation?
Well, somebody started by putting a black helicopter over my house. That mm-hmm. wasn't very polite, but I still don't understand what they were doing there, except maybe taking my picture. It was very intimidating, I'll tell you that much. Then when I first came out with that was when I did the first article and I exposed the world to the photographs of them landing on the Capitol building.
But has anything else come up of it besides the black helicopter? I mean,
yeah. Then when I published the first book and I got on national radio, my website was hacked severely.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, you tried to help me with it, and it was a nightmare because a lot of people were trying to see the pictures. Those were all taken down. And they weren't sure if they could buy the book or not, and because that whole thing had been messed up. And I tried for 3 days to fix that with the technicians who owned the server. They couldn't even get into their own server to effect repairs.
You know, that's happened to Kevin. Interesting things. I have been at his home, and he has had things happen that just absolutely are bizarre.
Well, look, we know that our government and other governments do cyber warfare.
Yeah.
But clearly, extraterrestrials have the capability of doing this, too.
Well, I think this is where it came from, don't you? That this technology is an infrastructure put into place by them.
Yes, I know that's a broad term, but yes, I think that they felt threatened by the fact that I was exposing something that they wanted to remain hidden. So, to answer your question about what is the U.S. government's reaction to my work, typically mm-hmm. it's been utter silence. Nobody wants to come on the record and address it. However, the U.S. Capitol Police, because they're in the mix, they're in the right in the heart of this, I gave them the opportunity in the first book to come on the record and address what had happened because they didn't respond. I couldn't understand why nobody was responding to the fact that this vehicle had landed on the roof and other vehicles were hovering around and all over the building. I mean, you know, and so I left the door open, and I started getting information from my journalism partner in D.C., Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
He had befriended, when he first got the photographs, he made a report with the detective division there at the U.S. Capitol Police, and they were very grateful, and so it opened the door for communications to come backwards towards me. And they were grateful in this regard. They said to Mr. Allen, your photographs verify what some of our officers have seen while on duty patrolling the grounds here at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, a couple of years ago, I was contacted by someone through the Capitol Police, the Sergeant at Arms, and they gave me two circumstances that happened in the 90s where Capitol Police saw UFOs at the Capitol building. They didn't land, but they were close enough they could have. They were just hovering around, doing whatever they were doing covertly, and they had to enter that into their logs.
Right.
After the event, any kind of anomalous event or any event has to be entered into the police logs. And I'd been told off the record that there was many such reports in the police logs. I asked to see sanitized copies of this, and of course, that was denied to me.
Right.
But they feel like, I know there are people within the U.S. Capitol Police have a very difficult position where they know this is going on, they don't like it, but there's nothing they can do about it. I mean, there's very little they can do about it, okay? And they don't want to seem incompetent either. So they basically gave me evidence that they know, and they wanted the public to know in a very limited sense, as much as they can't possibly could leak to me, that this is happening to their officers. They are aware of it.
Well, let's just put it out there to the folks who are listening. I mean, I read somewhere, Robert, that if you were to measure from you to a famous personality,
right, that
it would be 28 people.
Uh-huh.
Within 28 people, there's someone who knows someone who knows someone, and it gets right to the person you're wanting to get to.
Yep.
So let's put it out. We have a lot of listeners.
Sure.
They're worldwide. Let's start pushing for information, and let's start bringing it down to a focus point. I know there are others who have done this as well.
Yeah.
But people can get a hold of you at Unicus Magazine through your email.
Right.
So if you know something, or if you know someone who knows, or so on and so on, get this information to Robert, and let's see what comes of it. And you
can. I will protect your identity. I'm not here to out people. I understand how sensitive some of this information is.
Oh, sure.
But I'll also give an example. When the first book came out, and I went on national radio, somebody saw that and said, "Wow, I've got a picture of UFOs over the Pentagon in 1949 that my uncle gave me. I didn't know what to do with it. Here." And I said, "Well, gee, thanks. Can you give me the rest of the story? I need the rest of the story if you got it." He goes, "Oh, yeah, my uncle's still alive. I'll get it for you." Mm-hmm. And he gave me the whole story of how the photograph was taken and, you know, what was going on there. His uncle was an Air Force intelligence officer.
This is in your first book, right?
Pardon me?
This is in your first book?
It's in the... I didn't get that information until after I published the first book. So it's in the second book. The photographs, though, you see, it all comes back to this. This isn't just conjecture or eyewitness, you know, reports.
Uh-huh.
I have photographs that were taken by different people at different times that show basically the same thing. I have the world's largest civilian collection of UFO photographs, videos, and movies available for free, and I haven't even posted them all. Okay? I haven't had a chance to get around to do it. I've been so busy writing the second book.
Robert, we have a caller.
Go ahead.
Hello, caller. This is Jerry Wills and the Kevin Smith Show. Your name and where are you calling from, please? And, hold on a second, from what I can tell on my dashboard here, we're 30 seconds away from a commercial.
Ah.
But give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Victoria from Washington.
All right.
And I'm having a lot of trouble hearing the audio, and I get about every fourth word or so. So I guess I just want some fundamental questions on website and your guest name, Robert. But I can't get his last name and how to contact him or his book because someone keeps cutting off the audio.
Well, and I'm going to be cutting you off here for a second. I'll tell you what. Stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment. Thank you. I appreciate it. And Robert, we'll be back to you in a moment. Folks, don't go away. There's still more. We'll be back right after this short break. See you on the other side of it. So when we left, we had a caller. Don't remember the name. I have to ask that again.
Victoria.
Victoria.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I'm really wanting to hear what you have to say, and I'm hoping that I can listen to the replay when it's posted. But if you and I thought over the telephone I could get your website.
Sure, it's unicusmagazine.com. That's spelled UNICUS magazine.com. And my books are listed there. The photographs I've been mentioning, videos, movies of Washington D.C. are there, and also archives of radio work that I've been doing over the years about my investigation of extraterrestrials in D.C. and other places.
Well, I commend you for the bravery that you have doing this, because I know it's pretty risky business, and thank you very much for doing that. And Jerry, it's really great to hear your voice again and see you smile.
Thank you, Victoria.
and I like your choice of music.
You know, some of the music is by Element 115. You probably picked up on that.
Right. Yeah.
And the other is by a composer friend of mine, Kathy Anowers. in Sydney, Australia. His name is Steve Fearnley at Cloud Farm Studios. An amazing, amazing man. Just talent dripping off of him like sweat off of my face when I'm in the sun or something. I don't know. You know, you get the idea.
Well, it's beautiful. I wish you'd post it somewhere, you know, the order of the music that you put on so we can, you know, find it.
Well, that's
find
a good idea.
Somewhere and get it.
You know, if you go to Element 115, it's Element 115, the band.
Yeah.
You'll be able to order their CD, and I've got it, of course, and it's just every bit rock and roll amazing.
What's the name of it again?
Element 115.
Oh, Element 115. Okay.
The band.
Oh, okay.
.com.
Oh, Tom.
Yeah, no, com. C-O-M.
Duck, okay.
Yeah, if you go .com, you'll go somewhere and you'll be lost in cyberspace.
Yeah, Major Tom.
Yep.
Well, I really do appreciate the show tonight. It's really wonderful. I just wish I could hear it all. I don't know if anyone else has had that trouble, but I know you guys get interfered with, and it's a shame because this is important stuff to have, you know, the public know and be aware of.
And Robert's information.
I do appreciate it. Robert, what was your last name?
Stanley. Robert Stanley.
Stanley.
Yep.
Oh, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Folks, the lines are open. We're on final call here. We have 7 minutes, roughly, until the show closes.
God, how time flies when you're having fun.
I know. Aren't we having a great time, Robert?
I just get warmed up.
I know. I know. So am I. I always enjoy doing these shows. Getting ready for it makes me nuts.
Yeah.
There were things going on here for 3 days trying to set the studio up when Kevin told me, well, he didn't tell me, but you know what I mean. He says, Jerry, can you do the show? And I said, yeah, of course, not a problem. Well, you would not believe, I can't reach the camera to show you, but there's just piles of wires and hard drives and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had disconnected it, and then I forgot how to hook it back up. Oh, my God, I was just going berserk. Kathy can attest to that.
Well, let's go wireless, Jerry. After the show, we'll continue the show telepathically.
Well, I was thinking to do that. Everyone, close your eyes and take a deep breath. We're about to communicate. Your mind is not the boss. So, where's my... here it is. It's right in front of me, of course. I think we've really covered a lot of material here, Robert.
Well, I hope so.
You know, that there was this link that you sent me about this fellow. I wrote you back. I thought it was just a little goofy. And then I started reading more about it. And, you know, some of the points he makes are salient.
There, like I said before, there's a lot of people that are looking at the dark side from different perspectives, or they've had their own unique experiences, and they're starting to all come out of the woodwork right now, and it's timely because it helps corroborate or runs parallel to the conclusion of my second book.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I wasn't just imagining things. I think we're all... This is a time of revelation.
Yeah.
It just needs to happen, and what we do with that information is yet to be seen, but I think it's going to unlock all kinds of hidden potential in us.
Well, you know, it's easy to focus on the dark side because we don't feel that we have any power over it. And because of that, you know, we just feel as though we're at the whims of whatever they happen to create for us or do to us.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I like to try and teach people is that you have a light within you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. And, of course, that's metaphoric. The candle being, get fired up about this. If you don't like the way things are going, do something about it. Don't wait for someone else to. Because everyone else is waiting for someone else to do something about it as well. I've had the black helicopters fly around my place as well. Mm-hmm. I've even had the men in black show up at places where I was lecturing. I was warned not to talk about certain things. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to other speakers, and these fellows, they all said, well, they were just shaking in their shoes. Mm. Well, when it happened to me, maybe I'm a little arrogant, but I told them that they should go ahead and take their best shot. And if they interfered too much, I would eat them. And they were shaking in their shoes because no one had ever done that to them before.
Right. Well, the thing I like to do and or help other people to realize is that these guys, the bad guys, they thrive off of our fear and anger and anxieties and confusion. So the best thing that a person can do, in my opinion, is find something that makes them happy, very calm, centered, and loving is probably your best antidote to these to the dark side. And I really think that that's it. You can't fight fire in this with fire in this regard.
No.
You need to use the antidote is something completely different than what you might think. It's not that they're an enemy. I mean, they're their own worst enemy. That's why they hide in the dark. They mm-hmm. cannot expose themselves, otherwise we would confront them and ultimately figure out what it is that they dislike most.
Well,
and that's us loving ourselves, loving each other, being happy, making jokes, laughing is a wonderful defensive mechanism.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did was laugh when they told me that.
Hmm.
Of course, my wife says, Kathy, she says, well, how tall were they? I said, about, I don't know, 5'10", 6 foot.
Yeah.
She says, well, don't you think that if a woman my size, she's what is she, 5'9", were to approach them, that they just say, I don't think so? Robert, it's been wonderful having you on the show this evening. Folks, we're going to have another blockbuster show tomorrow night. I hope you can join us for that. It is time to shut down the transmitter. And again, Robert, thank you so much.
My pleasure. And he woke to the sound of the